You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Absolutely. That is absolutely crucial. That is my experience, that you foster collaboration, that you enable collaboration. And I had a great conversation with Sandra Thompson, which we both met at the conference. And when I showed her my process, she said, "This is liberating." And I said, "Yes, I believe so. It is liberating." Just imagine how much trust you build between organizations, which typically kind of live in silos, at least in big companies. People live in silos, and they have their opinions about the other silos.
They sure do. Welcome to the Delighted Customers Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Slayton, and I'm so glad you're here. I empower leaders to turn indifferent customers into loyal fans. I talk to guests with a wide range of expertise who share meaningful insights and wisdom. We give you practical tips and proven frameworks and share ways to help you delight your customers. Well, what fun on today's episode of the Delighted Customers Podcast, all the way from near Frankfurt, Germany. Again, another guest from Europe. I'm so excited about that. But this one in particular is really special, different. And I haven't known him all that long, but had the chance to meet him in person, not where I live in Delaware, but up in Michigan at Michigan State University. Recently, there was an annual meeting up there, a conference of CX people, and he was giving us a workshop and one of the presenters at the professional event that happened right after that on the topic we're going to talk about today, which has to do with customers and the goals they have and how we can help them achieve their jobs they're trying to get accomplished when they interact, jobs to be done when they interact with your brand. So I just can't wait to get into it. It's different. I think you'll find it fascinating. Eckert, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks so much for the invitation. It's a great honor and pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you. And I want to make sure I get you the pronunciation of your last name. Is it Bohm?
It's in German, it would be Boom.
Boom in German. Okay. So let's get that right. So Eckert Bohm. Boom. Yeah.
That's good enough.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Thank you for that. I think it is important to get people's names right. It goes along with customer experience management. And that's why I always ask people. Sometimes I can't remember them and I can't do a good job of effectively pronouncing them, but I do really want to try because I know it matters. But beyond that, would you mind sharing with the audience what it is that you do and what kind of led up to you doing what you do now?
Yeah. So since 2018, I'm focused on the jobs to be done theory and consult companies, train them to apply the method, and also trying to evolve my own tools and processes around jobs to be done. Before that, I worked for a long time for a big software company in Washington State. Served the last 3.5 years as their curriculum architect for the marketing discipline. And during that time, I got interested in marketing education, marketing training, and learning about the latest and greatest concepts, and had the pleasure to work with some great schools in the US and worldwide on creating training programs. And by education, I'm an industrial engineer, which is a role where you combine kind of business issues and technology. And after 30 plus years, I found out why I studied the subject
So sorry, Eckert, that was my fault. I accidentally hit the mute button and then it wouldn't let me hit the unmute button. So so we're going to have to rewind a little bit. My apology. The first time I ever did that. But
where I'm
glad we caught it. So you went to go work, and was it Microsoft? Yeah.
Yes, it was
Microsoft. Okay. That's but right. Then you said you were an industrial engineer.
Exactly. By education, I'm an industrial engineer. And after a long time, I figured out exactly why I studied the subject, because I see myself as bridging the gap between the solution space and the problem space, which is a customer and products and services that we provide, and really understanding the seam of both areas, if you want.
Okay, so you have an engineering background, which is really interesting because, you know, one of the aspects of customer experience, an area that's not my strength at all, is the idea of experience design. And that's right, how to design an experience in such a way that we can delight or have the customer have a good outcome, the desired outcome that they want. And so you're one of those small percentage of CX professionals that comes with that. At least you're wired to understand how engineering works, right?
Yeah, I think before you even take on solution development, design, you have to understand the problem first. So like Albert Einstein said, if I had 16, like an hour to solve a problem, I'd spend 55 minutes on understanding the problem and 5 minutes on developing the solutions. And I think that he really pointed out how important it is to understand the problem, which is the thing that customers want to achieve. It's like their jobs to be done. That's why they hire products and services for, to get a job done. And if we don't have a good understanding what the job is they want to get done, we are not good at designing solutions. So I think a solid understanding of these jobs to be done is essential for solution development and experience design.
Right. So I want to, often when guests come on, I like to pull out the gems so we don't roll past them too fast for our audience. And one of the gems that you shared was referencing in concept what Einstein said, you know, if I had an hour, I'd spend 55 minutes working on what the problem is and 5 minutes on the solution. And I think that comes in handy an awful lot for a CX professional, especially when we get challenged on how are you going to solve that? You know, how are you going to solve that? Or what's your solution for that? And I think it's easy to jump to the solution rather than spending more time and, you know, whoa, let's slow down. Let's make sure we're solving the right problem, right?
Exactly. And I think as professionals, sometimes we are deeply, let's say, experienced, and we may know some of the issues involved because we have done this for 20
right.
years. But and sometimes we don't know. It's a new area. Let's say we work for a client and the subject is new to us. Anyway, in both cases, I would recommend kind of stepping back and doing customer research, because even though if we have been part of the industry for so many years, we may make assumptions and we may still not know exactly what customer jobs they want to get done. Even if we ask them sometimes, they cannot tell us, because they do it subconsciously. They can talk about activities and desired outcomes, but they are mostly bad in explaining exactly what they want to accomplish at a high level. So it's up to us, I think, as researchers, to find out what people want to accomplish. A good example is a research study I've done with a colleague in the US a couple of years ago, when we asked adult children what the issue was with finding a new home for a loved one, an elderly one, like a nursing home or assisted living solution or something like that. And they can wonderfully talk about that subject. It's like all the details, all the buying cycles that went through, but they couldn't articulate that what we found out, it was about a decent last phase of life. That's what they wanted to accomplish for the loved one. And so we had to extrapolate that from our research findings, from all the puzzle pieces that we found.
So really interesting to dig deeper and not necessarily take what's on the surface, what's being presented on the surface. And another thing that you said, which I think is really interesting, that CX practitioners and professionals in general should be aware of, is that customers can't always articulate what they actually want. They could talk about how things like processes and activities, but what they desire at a deep level, you might have to, do some work on to try and get to that, right?
Exactly. So I like that famous Henry Ford quote. It's like, if I had asked people what they want, they would have told me faster horses, right? That's what they know. I mean, they don't know better. But if we do deep customer research, we hear so many stories from people. I mean, they are all different, but there are some commonalities that we can see. We can see some patterns in behavior, in needs, in pains, in gains, in customer jobs. So if we suck those up and process them, then we are in a much better shape to become like a trusted advisor to the customer. It's like advising them the kind of the best possible solution for their desired outcome.
Yeah. As another point of connection for Eckert and myself is that we both know, personally know Charlie Green, who wrote and co-authored the Trusted Advisor book, and are big fans of his, and this concept there of, I think that it dovetails nicely into customer experience, which is, how can we become, as CX leaders, professionals, or even as brands, become trustworthy to the people that we work with, or in the case of brands, customers? How do we go about doing that? And what you're talking about with the idea of jobs to be done, one thing inherently different about that approach is it requires us to put ourselves in the shoes of the customer. If what we're asking is, what are the jobs the customer wants to get done?
Exactly. Clayton Christensen, he's one of the protagonists and popularized jobs to be done. He said once that if you know the customer's job, it becomes obvious how to improve the product. So if we have a really clear understanding of the customer job or the customer jobs, sometimes it's like a cluster of customer jobs, then we are in a much better decision to design products, but not also products, but the supporting the customer throughout the whole customer journey, if you will, to help them in each step of that journey to make progress. And that doesn't start when the customer reaches out and try to find a solution. We can start even much earlier when the customer is, let's say, procrastinating, and because he or she has some kind of concerns to change and to make a move. We can encourage the customer actually to move forward and taking the first step in making progress to avoid later on any harm or maybe regret. So in the sense of, if I just had done this 3 years ago, I would be in a better place.
Yeah. Well, and I'm now going to ask you to kind of walk through practically what you've come up with in the jobs to be done. model, I will share. And so without the benefit of visuals, now I will share when you first explained to me, I did share a couple of screens with me, but in Michigan, in Michigan State, you led the entire group of faculty and many of the students who are enrolled in the MSU CXM master's program were there. You led us all through a very abbreviated version of what would be a full day, maybe 2 day workshop. And so I give you a lot of credit trying to put that much into such a short space. And when you and I talked about how difficult that is to do as a facilitator. But one of the things that, so if I could frame it out, Eckerd walked us through a multi-step process that had rectangular, maybe 3 by 4 foot or 2 by 3 foot sheets of like a laminated paper. It was a special paper. In fact, he said, you're not allowed to write on that. And they stuck to the wall with static electricity. So he already had all of us mesmerized before we even started. Like, why don't they have that in the US? Mm-hmm. You know, of course, Germany's ahead of us on that. Those of us who schlepped around 100-pound, you know, rolls of butcher block paper to put on a wall were envious and scratching their heads, why didn't we have that? But so we had these great thing. And it was like a wheel, right? Because it's going to lead into what you're going to talk about. And through the wheel, we got to walk through a process that put us kind of in the customer's shoes. So can you give, without visuals, give the audience an idea of kind of a step-by-step version of how that works?
Let me step back just a minute to explain where this tool came from. Because when my colleague and I, we worked on jobs to be done projects with clients, we found it rather kind of complicated to explain what job to be done is in the first place. It took us almost like a half a day, and clients really didn't appreciate that. They wanted to work with jobs to be done. The other issue that we faced was there weren't a lot of great tools. There were distributed tools like diverse tools all over, and we found it hard to bring them all together. So at one day we started a project to build something that we called the Wheel of Progress. It's a canvas. It's like a big poster. It's a canvas with a structure where you can capture the input from customer interviews, from jobs to be done interviews. And so how we typically do this is we lead interviews, and then we capture the notes. Either we can do this as a using a transcript and then transferring that content on sticky notes and post it on the poster, or we can, in the meantime, we are trained and educated and can do it in real time. So while the interview is going on, we can capture the essence of the interview and put them on the Wheel of Progress. But the Wheel of Progress has a very basic idea, is to document customer stories around purchasing a product. And it has a timeline, which has the shape of a cycle. So it's not a straight line or a bent line. It looks like more like a wheel when you look at it. And it goes. It starts with like the first thought, and ends with the experience with the product. And it has some steps in between. And totally, we look at like four phases and four types of events that happen that drive the customer kind of forward in their project to make progress. But that's not the only concept on the Wheel of Progress. We also have a thing called constraints. And constraints are kind of factual things that are in the way of making progress. They are without a feeling, I want to say, without kind of a negative feeling, they are just factual. Health related or financial your financials. It could be regulation, could be also time related, that you only have a window, a certain window to act, right? So and when you look at the wheel and the hub is badly greased, it's like there's friction, it's squeaky, it doesn't turn well, then you know the wheel is not going to turn very well. So you have the timeline, you do have constraints that you capture, and then you have, of course, forces driving you to the new world, leaving the status quo, and you have forces that keep you where you are, like your good old habits, for example. Mm-hmm. So we have like four forces to pulling you in the new direction, to kind of keeping you in the old place. And then we have something in between where you make up your mind. It's desired outcomes and avoidances. So when you don't know what the solution is going to look like, you have just an idea about the kind of the new situation, what you want to accomplish. And then we have, of course, we have jobs to be done with their gains and their pains. So they're all experience based. So when you conducted a job and there was a lot of pain, then you can document that as well as the pain, so the positive outcomes of performing a customer job. And the last piece I haven't mentioned yet is solutions. So we always capture what customers acquired in terms of products or services or any help to make progress. That can be things related to the purchase, that can be things related to the product itself. For example, when you buy like an expensive bike, you want to have a big lock and then maybe an insurance. So to understand the full solution space, and those products also point back to customer jobs. So that kind of in a nutshell is it's a very structured way how to capture the data. It's all color coded, so it can be easily read. And a nice side effect of having like that poster is like it can serve as a basic structure for your questionnaire. So you can walk into a customer interview without even kind of cold and naked, without any questionnaire, and you just look at the wheel of progress and see all the white spaces that you want to fill with data from the interview.
Mm. So so it has a lot of application. And what I heard you saying, you know, it's a great way. We're trying to get at what the customers really want, even if they can't articulate, even if they don't fully know yet, going back to the Henry Ford, you know, what I think I want is a faster horse rather than a car. You know, this can help us, I guess, kind of pull and push, poke and prod to dig into that and get a little bit deeper as to, you know, what are they trying to achieve and what are the things that might help or get in the way?
Exactly. So understanding the kind of the full 360, and we also call it the cycle, understanding the cycle, because eventually when you acquire a new solution, you're happy. I mean, you're supposed to be happy, right? It solved your problems, it helps you to get the job done, until you have the first thought that it's not good enough anymore, like the car that you make some strange noise and, you know, eventually I have to buy a new one. But for the time being, I mean you're happy with that solution, and understanding that kind of that movement to that process of making progress is what we want to accomplish, documenting. And of course, we don't rely on one interview or maybe on two. So typically there's a series of customer interviews after we have really thought deeply about who we want to invite. And then we have to, of course, we have to put together all the data from all the interviews. And in the past, it was really almost impossible. How do you combine interview A with interview B, because they're so different? But since we are now breaking down the information into these 12, we call them 12 elements, we can combine them at the element basis. So we can combine, we can cluster jobs, pains, gains, or any of these 12 elements. And then that's valid because we can paraphrase them, we can generalize them, and they don't need to be part of the same story. They can be part of many, many stories, but at the elements, they're very similar. Mm-hmm.
So you're documenting all this on one wheel, basically on a large poster that gets organized in a fashion that's discernible and can be shared with leadership to help them see the whole story behind what may go into a solution and why. My question to you is there a way to quantify, you know, the actions that you're going to take and the progress that you make? Like, how do you apply measurements to it, to the success of it?
Yeah, that's a great thought. It's a great question. What we try with qualitative research is to find qualitative information. But we know that quantitative research has kind of a feeling of maybe even being even more valid because you can look at numbers. That's not that easy to do with qualitative information. What we found empirically is when you combine all these items, you can visually see how big the cluster is that makes a generalized element. And since we do it on mural, we have a mural template that covers the whole process. Mm-hmm. We can count even the elements that we found. So we can, for example, see if one customer job has lots of constraints. There was a project I did with a US healthcare startup, and we could see all the kind of that huge number of constraints that a healthcare provider had because of, I mean, HIPAA and all the regulations that exist, and that explained it, why it made it so hard for the organization to move and change something, and there was a great learning for us to have it visually in front of you. And you talked about leadership, and I think it is when you do customer research, it is super important to be transparent about the data that you produced, where it's coming from, how it got processed, also having a good way to explain what it means, and not like being buried in tons of let's say PowerPoint slides or documents or transcripts, also to make it visual. You can look at it as a group of people. It's like 24/7 available, so whenever you like, you can go in and look at the interview level, which is like one interview on one wheel of progress. You can look at the aggregated elements, and then later on in the process, of course, we prioritize customer jobs and the other data, which is also important, is that it's like not every job is equal, right? You need to decide what customer jobs to apply for.
Yeah, so you have the other parts of the process are, you know, once you're done with populating the wheel, then there's a prioritization process, right? That turns into action.
Yeah, there are 5 steps. Yeah. The second step actually is doing the interviews, documenting those on a wheel of progress. Prior to that, we need to define what the project is. So define the project scope. We go in with what data do you have available about customer jobs, pains and gains, and some of the other items to really learn what the organization already may know, and define the project, which is who do we want to interview? What are the segments? Making sure they are diverse. And there's some depth. So you have maybe you have a different audience by gender, by age, by geography, and then you maybe interview like three of each, and then you have like 9 or 10 interviews, which can you work with. And that is the first step. That is super important, because it doesn't make sense to kind of start a project without thinking it through what you want to find out and where you want to focus. And that's why it's so important to build the right interviewee profile and invite the right people. So the second step, as we said, is doing the interviews, documenting them on the Wheel of Progress. The third step is the aggregation that I talked about. So using all the data, it's like puzzle pieces that you collect during the interviews and throwing them on a table and starting to sorting them. So building clusters, generalizing them, and then looking at the generalized items. In the fourth step, it's prioritizing customer jobs. This is where you perform the customer, where you have the customer to perform the customer job by building the right product or the right services, and also try to help them getting them through that process of making progress. And that is like where the magic happens. This prioritization is always, when I explain to my clients, this is when you do this as a diverse team with engineering, product management, marketing, sales, and get them all in one room and do the prioritization and apply some objective criteria, you come out with a solution that is supported by everyone, because everyone was involved in making that decision what customer job to apply for. And you have a strict separation of problem and solution. So this is not about the solution you want to develop. This is all about, in quotes, quotation marks, it's like the solution, the problem. And this is really, really fantastic. And then in the last step, you would use the data, the prioritized customer jobs and some of the other generalized data to form a strategy. And it's like programming a flight computer. It's like you have the parameters from the research and program your computer, so to speak. And then you go through the four phases the customer typically goes through when trying to make progress, and think about deeply, is there anything you can offer to help the customer in that particular phase to make progress? Can you help them to overcome procrastination? Can you help them to better define the solution space? What's all involved in finding a new home for your loved one, right? In the third phase, you've helped to find them to make to make the right choice, the right decision, because that's where the trade-off happens. What is the right solution for you? In the fourth phase, it is about the solution itself, the product, the services, and trying to be creative and create something that also serves the customer job at the highest level, that level that I mentioned that customers have issues to articulate, which they all want to accomplish.
Eckhart, let me double tap on one thing you said that I think can easily be just taken for granted, and that is, you talked about when you had everybody in the room, sales, marketing, product, engineering, etc. I think it's just so critical that you've got collaboration happening when it goes into what is the problem definition, and also the solution. I think we talked about this gentleman, Donald Miller, is an author who wrote about the story brand and building a story brand. And one of the things he talks about is almost every story has a hero, a guide, a villain, and a victim. And the mistake we can make as CX professionals guiding change is that we try to be the hero. And really what he suggests is that people don't need another hero. They don't want another hero. And quite frankly, if they view you as the hero, they can often withdraw separate themselves from the conversation and not really tell you how they really feel. Going back to trusted advisor, it's a sort of a form of the opposite of, well, it's a sort of a form of self-orientation, which is the inverse of building trust. And so what you're suggesting is, you know, or built into your process, if done correctly, is we've got all the parties at the table involved, and that's part of the reason that it works. I want to get your confirmation on that. I also want to say, you mentioned Mural as the digital tool that you use to capture the information, if I'm right. And so for those people who aren't familiar, it's essentially a digital whiteboard. That's all it is. There's lots of brands out there. I think Zoom, we're on a Zoom call right now. Zoom even offers one. But that's all it is really taking his model, his design, and making it available digitally so multiple people can have access to it and become a curated, archivable device. But am I right about the collaboration piece?
Absolutely. That is absolutely crucial. That is my experience, that you foster collaboration, that you enable collaboration. And I had a great conversation with Sandra Thompson, which we both met at the conference. And when I showed her my process, she said, "This is liberating." And I said, "Yes, I believe so. It is liberating." Just imagine how much trust you build between organizations, which typically kind of live in silos. At least in big companies, people live in silos, and they have their opinions about the other silos.
Sure do.
Foster collaboration, that you enable collaboration. And I had a great conversation with Sandra Thompson, which we both met at the conference. And when I showed her my process, she said, "This is liberating." And I said, "Yes, I believe so. It is liberating." Just imagine how much trust you build between organizations, which typically kind of live in silos. At least in big companies, people live in silos, and they have their opinions about the other silos. and when you go through a process, and when you have tools and objective criteria to apply towards a problem, towards a like a shared purpose, the customer job becomes a shared purpose. Then you can hit, you can kill two birds with one stone, I believe, which is, one is making sure you're addressing the right customer problem, which is the right customer job. And also you ensure that everybody's on the same page. There's kind of, because you immerse people in the data, I always encourage people to participate, at least to listen to customer interviews. And if people feel they understand the data, they've been part of the creation process, then they buy into the data. And when you prioritize these customer jobs, everyone has a say. Nobody can kind of finger point to claim, "I was a part of the process. I did not decide what problem to solve." So the customer will be happy. Internally, people will be happy because they have been involved. And so I believe you have a much better basis to move on, because you have now this North Star that was created jointly for all groups, for all teams to pursue. Yeah.
So Eckert, thanks for affirming that thought, which is collaboration helps with ownership on the back end of getting things done. I wanted to ask you if you wouldn't mind sharing an illustration. You alluded to the story about a nursing home, which is a good example, but can you share, and you don't have to name the company, but kind of a success story of, hey, we were here, this is the problem we're trying to solve, and then here's the outcome, and here's why it worked out so well.
Yeah, that was my case study at the conference. So I consulted, I cannot call out the name because that, but I can talk about what kind of customers I worked for. It was an OEM for household appliances. And when I introduced my method to them, I told them a story about a kitchen appliance another company has produced based on research on the customer. But there were some, I think there were some systematic failures when they did the research, because I don't think they evaluated the customer job correctly. And I think there was exactly going on what I was telling before, is like what the silos thought about each other, and they didn't trust themselves, and they also had perceptions about the customers, which obviously were wrong, because the product failed in a big time. So that, with that example as like, hey, this is not how you're supposed to do this, let's do it right. We did a research project with 40 interviews, and it was a little bit kind of larger than we typically do it, because they wanted to understand sustainability as well. If customers really would buy any solutions that appear to be or leading in sustainability. And so we looked a little bit left and right from that household appliance that they were that they wanted to produce. And after we have done the research, what happened is they understood that what they had developed, at least on paper, all the designs were already kind of, they had technology solutions in place already. It wasn't built yet, it wasn't fully engineered, but they had a very strong concept. They realized there is no market for it. They realized we would have probably wasted a two-digit million euro or US dollar if we had done this, if we had just produced it, because it was really not obvious what customer job or cluster of customer job it would solve. In fact, it was against everything we have seen in terms of customer behavior, how they consume today. It was, I mean, there would be a huge bet. So the combination, I think, of demonstrating this example of a failed product, because they made kind of some mistakes, I think, and also doing the research and figuring out what the customer jobs were that customers really care about, I think they came up with a revelation that okay, let's step back and go back to the drawing board and think about a better solution that we could build.
So you save them time, money, and energy by helping them avoid stepping into really some quicksand. Yeah, or money pit. Yeah. Well, that is fascinating. I have one last question before I get to my final question, which is, I wonder if other people are thinking the same thing who haven't visually seen this. We've kind of described that this is more of a, you know, it's a wheel on a rectangular or a square piece of paper that turns into a mural design. But how else would you describe, for those who are familiar with what journey maps are, how would you differentiate this from a journey map?
I think the uniqueness about the Wheel of Progress is that it has a lot of meaning from the customer point of view, because it demonstrates the struggles going through the process of making progress. So as I explained, we have these two circles, the timeline, like this, these different steps and phases customers go through. We have the constraints as the hub of the wheel. And then we have a vertical and a horizontal line. So we have like four points in time that go through the canvas, and that divides it up into four quadrants. So in the first quadrant at the top left, we put forces that oppose each other to show the struggle. So do I go or do I stay? Do I stay where I am because I feel comfortable, because these are my habits, or do I go because I feel a strong push to move forward? In the second quadrant, at the top right, It's about making up my mind, what are my desired outcomes and what are the avoidances. So kind of dreaming about a new solution that would be like ideal, which of course doesn't exist. In the third quadrant at the lower right, it's about making the trade-off decision. So it's about the pull of a new product or the product I've looked at, could be several products, and the anxieties and the things I didn't like when I looked at the products. So also, again, opposing forces, one pulling me, the other one is kind of pushing me back. And in the fourth quadrant at the lower left side, we capture the customer jobs with their pains and their gains. Also, pains and gains are like a little bit like opposing forces. One is positive, the other one is negative. So this whole canvas is able to demonstrate what the struggle is of making progress. And that's where we as providers can help the customers to ease that kind of that movement and making progress at the end.
Excellent. I love from the beginning till the end the idea of, you know, what problem are we really trying to solve here? Let's spend more time on that. And this tool is a mechanism strategy, really helps us to get to that, the answer to those questions. And the illustration you gave, you know, sometimes it's really a go or no go decision, whether you're even aware of it. And in this particular example, it was a no-go decision, which saved the organization a ton of time, money, energy, resources, etc. So before we go, I want to ask you if what advice would you give to your 20-year-old self?
Yeah, in retrospect, I would say when you're young, when you're fresh from college or university, you don't know what the future is going to look like. And just trust yourself. Trust that you will go through a pass. There will be ups and downs, but eventually you will discover where your strengths and weaknesses are, where your passion is, and things that you think you can make a big difference. I've never thought, like 5 years ago, I would have never thought that I would ever develop a tool, a business tool, or a process or a method. And nowadays I look back and just I'm surprised that happened. Although it was never my goal to do this. So trust in yourself that you will discover kind of your destination, where you belong in the future eventually.
Excellent. And Eckhart, if people would like to get a hold of you, what would be the best way for them to reach you?
I think a great way would to be connect through LinkedIn. So you will find me on LinkedIn. Maybe you can post kind of my yeah. name. That's only one Eckhart Bomi on LinkedIn. Otherwise, I do have two websites that I would recommend. One is my company website, unipro-solutions.com, where I describe the program, the offer, the process, and how I can help if people are interested in applying this. And the other one is wheelofprogress.com, which talks more about like the tool we developed more than 4 years ago and has some examples. And so you can learn about the tool if you're just interested in the Wheel of Progress.
Excellent. So Eckhart, I want to say this again. Boom.
Boomer.
Boomer.
Boomer. Yeah.
Boomer.
Excellent.
Love it. Eckhart Boomer. All right. He's got a big smile on his face if you're not watching it on video. And so do I. And we're just so grateful that you were able to join us on the Delighted Customers podcast. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Okay. Thanks for listening to the Delighted Customers podcast. I'd like to ask you a favor. If you have enjoyed this episode or any of my other ones, hit subscribe or follow. I've got a lot of other great guests that are coming up, and a lot of other great content, and I don't want you to miss anything. You can find any links or references on the show in the show notes, and you can find those on my website at empoweredcx.com.